Support for this episode comes from an exciting new podcast from two Americans you've probably heard of before, President Barack Obama and not president, but still national treasure, Bruce Springsteen. Renegades Born in the USA is out right now exclusively on Spotify, and it's a fascinating, intimate conversation between two longtime friends who just so happen to be President Obama and Bruce Springsteen. They sit down for a deep dive into America and all that entails. They trade stories of the people who live here and work to connect their own efforts to find meaning, truth, and community with the larger American story. Listen for free right now, only on Spotify. Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding.
And I'm musicologist Nate Sloan.
Nate, this year we've been doing a lot of Grammys coverage. I think because there have been songs and artists that I've been really interested in, music that has captivated me.
Yeah.
And this week we're going to talk with one of the nominees for Best New Artist, Catronauta.
Whew.
Catronauta's really inspiring. Like so many other artists in this category, he's not a best new artist. He's been doing this for a long while, building this career and getting a lot of recognition. Literally moving from making beats in his mom's basement to making beats with collaborators like Pharrell and Anderson .Paak, Sid, Madlib recently announced. He's got 2 tracks coming with Madlib.
Very cool.
And he's done work for Mary J. Blige, Alicia Keys, Chance the Rapper, Kendrick Lamar, and Madonna.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the first time that I heard Catronauta was when you played me his track at our weekly team meeting.
Yeah, I think there were probably 4 weeks in a row where I was just suggesting everyone listen to different tracks from 99.9%. That album is going to be on my end of decade list for sure. Mm. There's something about the way that Catronauta uses samples that just rocks me to my core. Mm. And I feel a certain kind of kinship in a way because, you know, I'm a music historian.
Right.
And I feel like at his best, Catronauta is making a statement that DJs and producers are music historians themselves.
What do you mean? Like, break that down for me.
Let's take a track from 99.9% like Light Spots.
I remember when you first played this for me, it was instantly hypnotizing. There was something about the way that he's flipping these samples that it's frantic and yet super groovy at the same time. And I'm wanting to know the references. And yeah, just I'm totally captivated.
The sample here is from a 1973 record by the Brazilian singer Gal Costa called India. And this particular track is called Pantos de Luz. Maybe the first thing you hear when you compare the original to Catronauta's Light Spots is that he's bumping up the tempo. His version of the song is a little bit faster, a little bit brighter.
Right.
But otherwise, he's really leaving the original pretty unchanged. Hmm. It's kind of like you're hanging out in his living room and he's like, hey, check out this classic Brazilian Tropicália release I just dug up. This kind of obscure, deep cut. Let's just like kind of sink into the couch and listen to this together. And you're like, yeah, whoa, this is cool. I've never heard this before.
It makes sense because he's famous for his DJing skills as much as he is as a producer.
And then you get to this one point in the Gal Costa original where she says these lines in Portuguese that roughly translate to something like, I feel very happy. In fact, I dare say I feel completely happy. And at that moment, Catronauta stops the track. He grabs those 3 lines of lyrics and he starts looping it in this way that completely catches you off guard, kind of surprises you, and then, like you were saying, just totally sucks you into its world.
Oh, and then we get the house beat. Oh, it's so good.
This is where Catriona as historian comes into the picture. In a way, what he's doing there is he's asking you to pay attention to, like, I don't know, what is it, like 3 seconds of music from this 3 minute long track. And he's asking you to pay really close attention. Listen really carefully to this. And I'm going to help you. I'm going to put it on a loop and I'm going to give it to you over and over and over again. And I'm going to ask you to just contemplate this little snippet of music in such a deep way. It's like the aural equivalent of standing in front of a painting and asking someone to just look deeper at that brushstroke. Don't look at the whole painting for a second. Just look at this one brushstroke. This is like the DJ equivalent of that. Like, step away from the song and just listen to this little scrap of melody for a second and just sit with that. Pay attention to it. Let it burrow deep into your mind and soul.
And I see how here in the music, you take this phrase, even if you don't speak Portuguese, there is something so captivating. It definitely makes you want to go deeper into the song, look it up, find the references, see what the sample is. Go do the reverse crate digging, find all of his references.
Yeah, that's right, right. So not only is Catriona the historian, but he's enlisting you to become a music historian as well. You've been conscripted into the ranks now. And of course, he's not just putting this scrap of melody under the microscope for you.
Right.
Like you said, he's also adding something, and he's adding this just ridiculously danceable house groove on top of what's already like a very thickly instrumentated section of music.
Right.
But he's giving you this modern element. He's bringing 1973 and crash landing it into 2016. So it's like a bit of history, but like all good historians, he's trying to make that history relevant. And he's trying to say history repeats itself. What's old is new. This song may have resonated with people when it was released in the same way that a modern dance track would strike you today. We're bridging that historical gap. It's like the other day you were telling me about how you've been watching all these TikTok videos about Marxist capitalist theory.
Yeah, the Gen Z is really good at them.
And you don't have the time or inclination to dig into like Marxist theory. You're not going to like read a 1,000-page book, but you will watch a 30-second TikTok video because it's fun and it's accessible and it's like right in the palm of your hand. You know, we want history to be accessible like that. We want it to be enjoyable. That's what DJs do. They take music history and they make it fun and pleasurable. And they don't make it kind of distant or intimidating. This song brings this obscure 1973 track to life for you to dance to, for you to bathe in, for you to go do your research. It's like, I don't know, it's, to me, it's more than just a fun track to listen to. It's like history in action.
I love your passion here. This is a song that totally connected with me as well. And, you know, obviously there's a part of me that's like, yeah, but lots of people sample, right? It's not like he's the only one doing this. And yet there's a certain way in which the way that he flips his samples where, as you put it earlier, they're like, it's raw. It's really honest to the original material. It's not trying to obscure it. So you're like, oh, I see the thing that you're doing, and yet still finds a way to make it really compelling for this moment. And I wanted to talk to him about that and talk to him about how he developed his craft and how over a decade he built a career to the point of the recognition of a Grammy Best New Artist nomination.
I am Catriona, all the way from Montreal, Canada. Been making beats since I was a youngin, and now here I am, Best New Artist for the Grammys. It's really crazy and exciting.
Let's just go back to the beginning. Take me to the start. What got you into making music?
Music was always in me. And I always wanted to make music. It was when I was 14, just like finding out about those softwares online, like Virtual DJ and Traktor. I downloaded the demo of Fruity Loops a bunch of times, but I never knew how to work. And it was my little brother who was just like, nah, that's how you do it. That's how you do the drums. That's how you do the bass. Like, he literally taught me everything. And it was kind of deep already when I was like 14 and 15, just finding out about chopping samples and making loops and stuff like that.
Where were you? Where was this happening?
I was actually at like the suburbs, and it's like a city called Saint-Hubert, not too far from Montreal, but it's like nothing going on really. It was really in my mom's basement, and like we had a PC that we had to share, the whole family, and then I was making my beats there. What was motivating me was this like small community in YouTube where there's a bunch of producers posting their beats, and people were just giving you props like, yeah, this is dope, this is nice. So that and my brother was mostly like the motivation of what kept me going.
Was there a moment of significant validation outside of your family and that immediate small community?
There was the one thing that really popped off. It was like this small community when I was like 19, and it was just beat makers in Montreal or just suburbs around the city. And then we come together in the city to just show off our beats, and people were just giving us props and give us encouragement. And then that's when you knew that music was more than just music. It was like everything that came with it, you know.
In addition to making your own work at this point, you're also heavily in DJ culture and also into remixing. You're posting remixes to SoundCloud. There's a song that really takes off. What is it? How does it happen? All I got to say is
I post this remix of Janet Jackson. I was really inspired by this Flying Lotus show that I just seen. And that night I made that remix in one night. Posted at 5 a.m. I go to sleep, and then it's like 12 p.m. I get notifications off my phone. It's like my SoundCloud going crazy. Just like 100 notifications on SoundCloud. And it was like, what the heck? And I just go back to sleep because I was like a night owl. Those were my night owl days. I would like wake up at 4 p.m. And then it's like 4 p.m. You'd see like your page. There's like 2,000 likes on this remix that you posted like today. That was something that was like unimaginable. And then the remix eventually blew up and it got bigger. People were still talking about it, you know. And I waited a little longer for the Teacher Moses one to come out after. I put it out and that one kind of did twice as much, as big as it is, you know. People are still talking about it today. And it's like, wow. Like, I just knew I had something. It kept on being like, oh my God, K-Tronada makes those remixes. So that's where the SoundCloud fame came up with, you know?
It sounds like these remixes, especially the Janet Jackson remix of If that you put up in 2012, this is happening spontaneously.
In my room with my brother, you know, like still sharing rooms.
Right. And you talk about it now with a great degree of confidence, which is deserved. Did you know that it was good then?
I knew it was good, but I just didn't know that people would like it. I was like, if you like it, you know, that's cool. It kind of like crossed over a lot of like genres. To me, it was like this, like whatever hip hop experimental, like R&B thing I'm doing. And people saw it as house too. Like, it's like it broke through the house world. It broke through like the R&B and hip hop and, you know, dance music. So it was like, whoa, what am I actually doing? What genre am I actually going for? So,
yeah, because sonically, it's kind of strange. You have a hip-hop 808 bass, but you're playing it as if it's like a P-Funk style funk bass rather than, you know, how it might be used in trap.
Literally.
You've got a four to the floor house beat and this kind of like DIY Casio sort of keyboard sound in the background with future bass pumping sounds.
Exactly.
Like, there's no generic continuity, but it works.
Yeah, it's like Nintendo, like Super Nintendo synths with like bass, you know, the same way we use as trap. It's like I just use it as like a P-Funk, like you said, kind of like the Boogie inspirations.
Does the breadth of sounds that you're pulling from at this point reflect what's going on for you as a DJ? Like, is that why you're playing so many different kinds of sounds all mashed together?
It's like really just what I'm listening to. I was not really into just one genre of music. So it's really a mixture of genres. But it can be one thing at the same time. It can just be some boogie stuff. But you know that hip-hop, after that, they actually like took stuff from boogie and made it hip-hop, you know? It's really like kind of like a full circle of genres, you know, like all the jazz stuff that I'm influenced about, you know, house, it really comes from disco, and it's so many of like those things that comes around again, you know?
What's old is new.
Yeah.
You have these remixes, they seem to pop off bigger than the next. So what happened after your remixes blew up?
I've met my manager who booked me for this show in Halifax, and all I asked was like, I need a hotel room and I need $200, and that's it. And I eventually go to Halifax, which was like my first plane trip and my first show outside of the city. And then the next day he was like, do you need help with your management? And I'm like, I don't have a manager right now. Yeah, I kind of need help. He's like, okay, well, let's do this. We all started from like the beginning, and I think in 1 week I was in blogs. People were starting to talk about me. I was starting to make noise. I do this EP. It's called Catra Toto. It's not available on streaming anymore, but I do this EP and then I go on tour in Europe. And it's like everything is still keeps on growing from then on. And it's like I just went to Europe and that really changed my life. Like I was not the same after, you know?
A lot of people start taking notice. You go on the road, opening, DJing for Madonna. It seems like lots of opportunities are happening. What pulls you back home to record your first LP?
I think the whole time I was working on my first LP, which was 99, it was supposed to be an EP at first. XL heard the EP and they were like, well, this is so good. We need an album. So I was like, cool. You know, I was ready to do an album. I was ready to like just come out with, you know, a body of work. And I was still on tour at the same time while working, and it was really bothering me. But nobody heard those songs. It's like, what are we doing, you know? Like, I should go back and finish this record and put it together. And I was kind of burned out. So I was really like, okay, I need to stop touring. And then I just went back home. Home was still in the basement. Was still in my mom's basement. Put everything together. And then I think I turned it in 2016, like just in January or December 2015.
This is advertiser content.
Brought to you by AAA Insurance.
When that door opens, your heart rate goes up, fresh air hits you, but then you calm down again. You are at peace, you have trust, you're prepared, and the most relaxed moments I have is being in the door, ready to skydive, and having the trust that it's all going to be okay. My name is Kate Cooper Jensen. I made my first skydive in 1978. I have over 14,000 jumps and I love it.
Even though Kate's a skydiving legend, staring out the door of an airplane at 10,000 feet still feels pretty nerve-wracking. But when that fear creeps in, Kate knows there's only one thing to do.
You have to have some trust. I shed all the doubt and I have never felt freer in my life.
There is definitely a way to prepare yourself mentally, even in the face of fear. We call it visualization.
That's psychologist Dr. Chilian Small. Studies show that the act of visualizing an event or task doesn't just help us improve our performance. It can amount to actual learning.
You are literally activating the same parts of your brain. We can truly imagine ourselves to the destination that we desire.
Even if you're not preparing to jump out of a plane, we've got other leaps to take, like buying our first house or a new car for the family. Prepare for your leap with AAA Insurance, a partner people like you have trusted to protect life's biggest investments for over 100 years. Learn more at AAA.com/insurance.
This is paid content from Simple Mobile. For musicians, landing a big record deal used to be the holy grail. Now, artists armed with laptops, loop stations, and even cell phones prove that bigger is not always better.
They ask me why you work like that. Take a break, why you work like that.
It's estimated that self-releasing artists earned more than $2 billion last year.
I love the creative freedom that I have as an independent artist.
That's Anthony Patterson. aka
Call Me Ace.
He's an independent hip-hop artist based in the Bay Area who sidestepped the traditional path to success.
I rap about real stuff. I really am a married first-generation Jamaican-American immigrant that is one of the first to go to college in his family, the first to go to business school, have worked at these Fortune 500 companies, has been homeless.
Ace graduated from business school in 2016 and took on a consulting job. That's also when he tapped back into his old passion, rapping. 3 years later, Ace released his breakout album, Airplane Mode, which flew all the way to number 50 on the Billboard chart.
I was like, whoa, okay. It was wild too, because as soon as the album was done, I told my wife, I was like, yo, I want to hit the Billboard charts with this.
Ace got right to work on the next album. That's the hustle of being independent. His latest release, Out of Office, just dropped. Living independently though and free to be. Do things your way with Simple Mobile and no contract ever. Find out how at simplemobile.com.
Let's talk about some of what's going on 99.9%. There are a lot of extraordinary collaborations here. I think one of the standout tracks is Glowed Up with Anderson .Paak. Tell me about first how the beat came together for you. How did this track come together?
I made a beat like around those times, like 2012, before I blew up. And like, I really had a phase where I used to sample like library sounds and just put traps over them, like just trap drums.
What do you mean library sounds?
You know, library music, like the KPM and all those like kind of like music for movies. It's like instrumental music, but yeah, for moods. And then you just put that in like a movie or something. But it's like those vinyls, like if you check on those records, they always have amazing samples. And if you check on the sci-fi section, that's where they use the synths, or they'll use like just like crazy like vintage sounds.
Sampling is core to your sound. Mm-hmm. What drives you to produce in this fairly laborious form?
I've been on hip-hop music for a while now. I come from actually like, you know, listening to a lot of J Dilla, Just Blaze, Knife Warner, all those producers were just like Madlib. They all just sample a lot of records and they do crate digging, and they just, at the same time, you discover a lot of music and your knowledge music just expands on a crazy level just by discovering those records, just by crate digging. And, you know, I had a phase where I used to crate dig. Like I have my record collection right here. From the beginning, the absolute beginning, like I sample and sample. And I just learned from my favorite producers, honestly. Hmm.
So you take this library music, you set it to a beat. How does the collaboration with Anderson happen?
Anderson .Paak was just coming up. I just sent beats and he had a bunch of demos of like in my songs, that's why there's two parts on Glowed Up, you know?
Yeah, there's a first half and then sort of two thirds of the way through, there's a sample flip and the whole thing changes up. Tell me about that.
I did Glowed Up because it was like, that's like a personal one that I really love. Like, and I just wanted to put down on the album. And like, of course he wouldn't finish the song. Of course he wouldn't finish the song. So that's why I put it as an interlude. Spent your whole life out in the spotlight, but something had to pull you back to the starlight. Cause even when you're far out there in the sun, you're still in the hands of the one who cares for you.
You said you were sending beats to him. You weren't in the same room working together.
Nah. Like, most of the 99.9 was mostly done in my mom's basement. Like, I didn't had any guests recording with me.
You're just emailing back and forth.
Yeah, at the time it was working because, you know, people used to work remotely and it was like we would end up meeting later much in life.
Well, especially for you as a producer where, you know, you're not putting down vocals, so you're working with a lot of collaborators and there's many standout ones. I know another highlight for me is Sid of the Internet on the song You're the One.
Yeah. Well, I only, when it's too much, if I survive, maybe
How would you describe the production? What's going on in that song?
It's so all over the place to me. Like, it's like, to me, like, when I did You're the One, I was just messing around. I had this new sub fatty, and then I just really mess with, like,
some bass at the
bass. Like, you see the bass, it really sounds like Moogie and nasty. Like, it was like, it doesn't really make sense to me. Like, right now, I'm like, wow, I really let that one slide. But people love it, you know? It was really me just messing around. And, you know, I never use MIDI controllers before using You're the One. You know what I'm saying? So I was really all making, like, by drawing stuff on the mouse and stuff like that.
Yeah, so you've got this super deep funk bass line. Again, we got some sort of house production. Part of what's surprising, though, is that all of your work prior to the song was done clicking things in with a mouse into your software. But your drums don't sound programmed. There's life to them. How do you breathe life into drums when it's happening and it's, you know, just right there on your computer?
I don't know. It's like I'm really obsessed with, like, not having to sound like this, like, very computer or quantized. So, you know, I would drag, like, you know, the hi-hats late, and it would, like, automatically sound like it's not quantized, you know? I would do the same with the bass. You know, it's like it's two different swings in one beat when I used to, like, produce with the mouse. It was a part where things are quantized, like the kick and the snare. And then, like, you know, the chords, the hi-hat. Can I forget the hi-hat? And then, you know, the bass. And everything else has to be, like, pushed back, like, more forward, so that it'll give, like, this kind of, like, oh, something is, oh, it's not gonna catch up. Oh, I actually did it. And it's like this swing, like, you'll feel, like, to the back of your neck.
Even in the process of making this first LP, you're landing some meaningful collaborations, but you're still self-educating. You're learning new ways of making music. Tell me about, where do we go from 99.9% to Bubba? What happens in the in-between from 2016 to 2019?
It's not that I wasn't inspired. I was really, like, constantly making stuff. And I was using Fruity Loops at the time. Like, I did the whole dynamics. Like, I mixed the whole stuff on Fruity Loops. So it was like, I got this Mac and then Native Instruments. Shout outs to Native Instruments for sending me the machine. And that software just looks so beautiful that I was like, I gotta use it, you know? I gotta learn how to use it. So I was really, like, on my quest to learn the machine. And I was just making terrible beats for, like, 2 or 3 months, like, in a row. Really trying to find myself. I was not really trying to work on an album. I was really trying to be this producer, you know? And I just couldn't figure out why I was, like, not the producer I wanted to be. And I was like, of course, I don't live in LA. You know, I don't live in, like, the spots where the music industry is happening. You know, it's like, or stuff like that. So that really bothered me. And I also moved out of my mom's house as well. So it's like all these changes in my life. And I was just living life, really. I was going out, partying more. And eventually the idea of Bubba came around 2018. In my birthday, when Teacher Moses sent me a culture. Culture was the first beat, and then I was like, okay, an album is coming. Like, sometimes you just know, like, okay, I gotta work on this album. I gotta work on an album. And then, like, I kind of sat on it, trying to get more people involved. I went to LA for a couple months to just, you know, now, like I told you, 99.9% was, like, this record where I was just collaborating remotely.
Right.
But now it got to a point where I was like, you know, I gotta meet the artist. I gotta, like, catch a vibe. I want to be the producer I'd never been. I was still kind of shy. So I was just always, like, never really saying anything. But the artist was always doing their thing. You know, Cali Uchis and, you know, Estelle, they all did their own thing. And I was just like, wow, I can't really say nothing. Like, now I got to, like, just watch what you do. It was all these like demos coming together and I had enough material and it was like all dance music. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do a dance electronic album. Focus on that, you know, the hip hop or all the beat stuff that I was making is going to like wait for a little while. So I just did the electronic and dance album and that's how Bubba came together, really.
Let's talk about 10% with Kaliuchis.
Yeah.
You're out in Los Angeles. This is sort of the first time formally collaborating in a room. You've got some really talented folks. You're feeling a little shy.
Yeah.
But you get some great material out of this. 10% with Kaliuchis gets some really great play, and it's a really fun track. How does this come together?
You know, Kaliuchis, like, we worked on her first mixtape. We go way back. It's like in the beginning of her career, like I brought her at Coachella to perform because we had this song called Rush and I really like this song. This is like an amazing song that people should not sleep on. But that's like the first song we ever worked together. We always was just friends after that. And then we did 10%, but we've been sitting on 10% for years because it was like 2017. And then it took me like over a year that I had to link, like we worked together again. And then I was like, Hey, you want to add something to that song? It's cool because we all see, I see my evolution and I see hers too. So it's like, it's kind of, It's kind of nice to see that. I sampled this like drum loop by this R&B band called First Choice, Love Thing. It's like this classic, like really known drum loop in there. So I just did like random synths, like what I usually do at the time, because that's why it sounds really reminiscent to like what I used to do. Added synths, and then the years went on by, and then I just added a couple stuff, like, you know, strings and those little like plucky synths at the end, and just trying to make it like better, you know, make it sound better, make it sound less dated, and you know, that's what it was.
I feel like there's this sort of internet obsession of trying to figure out what is the Catronata sound. What are those sounds that you sort of identify as a personal sound?
Some people like say, yeah, like I'm making a Catronata type beat, and it's like I have no idea what you're talking about. But
what are the things you think about that you care about in terms of representing yourself?
The fact that I'm doing when I do house music, I don't do it quantized, and I just like make the hi-hat super funky. The bass line, people are talking about, oh, Catronata bass line, but it's not really my bass line. It's just 808 or just very a subby bass line that you feel like, you know, like the same way Jay Dilla used it or, you know, Madlib uses. It's like a very subby bass that is just, it kind of shakes the trunk of your car, you know? So I always use a portamento on the synth. So it's like this, like every time it attacks. So that's what it is. And there will be like some plucky synths, you know, you add a little plucky synths like in the end, like that's like the classic Catronata.
You seem to think very deeply about the sonics of the work. You were saying earlier about how in the in-between of these records, you're teaching yourself new tools, you're trying things out. You say there's a bunch of beats that you're making, which you're like, they're not hot beats.
Yeah.
And I've read in other interviews that there was a sort of moment of maybe a crisis of confidence of like, wait a minute, why aren't some of the collaborations that I'm wanting to do working out? How do you know when a beat is whack or when it's really working and ready for another artist?
Like you feel it in your body, you feel it like, I don't know, maybe it's a heart thing. Like I just based it on like whatever I feel over here in my chest or in my heart. If it makes me happy at another level, that's when I'm like, okay, I feel it now. This is great. This is good. But there are some times that it just don't hit right. And you're like, maybe I shouldn't put this one out. This is not gonna come out. There's some times that you feel this way. And some nights that it's like, oh my God, this is the most amazing shit I ever did. And then you wake up the next day and then you're like, maybe not. I'm not sure.
As an instrumental producer, what continues to drive your creative curiosities? What kind of statements are you wanting to make or discover?
I just love making music, really. And the fact that I have this gift of making music, like it's amazing. And I don't even know how to play keys, and I still manage to create my own production, create my own compositions. That's really like fascinating. That's like something I should really not take for granted, you know? Like, it's something I'm really happy to have that talent of knowing what's good and what's not in my ears. I guess this is really a gift, because I can't really comprehend like that. How come I know all these things about music and I really was not consistent with like my piano lessons growing up and stuff like that, you know? So, yeah.
Many people have noted your music over the last decade. There's been many different stages, from remixing to getting signed to XL, your 99.9% record. But with Bubba, you have the Grammys saying, hey, we've got nominations for Best Dance Recording for 10%, Best Dance Electronic Album for the whole album, and also Best New Artist. I'm curious about how this external validation changes things for you.
It's amazing, man. It's something that it's like secure. My place is secure in like, I don't know. It definitely gives you like a secure feeling that your stuff is dope officially. Like, we know the Grammys have their controversies, but it's still dope to be recognized. It's really amazing. It's something that is really historical, whether you like it or not. It's amazing. Especially coming from where I come from, it's like, I'm always speechless when I talk about like me being nominated, because it still feels a little weird, you know? I can't really wrap my head around the fact that I'm just making stuff here where I'm actually sitting at.
Yeah, you're no longer in your mom's basement, but you're nearby.
Yeah. I even come back to my mom's basement, make beats sometimes, you know, just because I'm bored sometimes. But I'm just making beats and I just compile records to make albums, and then I get recognized from that. It's really amazing. It's really great.
What's next for you?
Just last week, I was like, you know what? I'm going to work on a new album. There's a lot of crazy things that is happening in my life, and I could use a lot of that in like writing, because I've been writing a lot of lyrics and just me singing demos and stuff like that.
What's going on and what are you wanting to say?
Relationship stuff, because I know my life is okay outside of this relationship I had, but I know like this would be good lyric content, you know, for the album and stuff like that. So I'm really trying to make like, you know, a continuation of whatever I'm at, you know, in terms of like life and my evolution as a beat maker, because I did evolve since Bubba, you know. And it's like, I was really happy that Bubba came out at the time, because like, it was, for me, it was like, yeah, this is who I am, really. This is really the evolution, you know. Now it's like I've evolved again even more. Like, I think it's like an everyday thing, so I just want the people to hear that sooner or later, you know.
Beautiful stuff. It's been really a joy getting to chat with you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been great. Thank you.
Switched on Pop is produced by Bridget Armstrong, Nate Sloan, and me, Charlie Harding. We are illustrated by Iris Gottlieb, and social media by Abby Barr. Engineering by Brandon McFarland, and this week by Bill Lance. Our executive producers are Nishat Karwa and Hannah Rosen. We're a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture.
You can find more episodes of our show on the Apple Podcast app, on Spotify, or literally anywhere you get podcasts. Also, tell us what you're listening to. Tell us your burning music questions at SwitchedOnPop on Twitter and Instagram. We love talking to you, and many of our best ideas come from our listeners. So hit us up.
Join us again next week on Tuesday. And until then, thanks
for listening.